Hey, everybody, this is John Zaratsky, the author of Make Time and Sprint, and I've got a really special conversation to share with you. This is an interview that I did with my friend Eric Skogsberg. Eric is the associate director at the Hub for Innovation in Learning and Technology at Michigan State University. He is a former English teacher who became obsessed with questions about what makes for a great learning experience. Why are some classes just kind of preparing students to take a test while others really are transformational? And he has spent his career trying to answer those questions. He's got a PhD in curriculum and learning, and he works on this stuff full-time at Michigan State. Jake and I also worked with Eric to develop the Highlight course, and that's our four-week program that helps people create durable, sustainable habits for making time for what matters to them every day. And among many interesting things and really important perspectives that Eric brought, the thing that really stands out is that he helped us appreciate the importance of community in any kind of learning experience. And so that's a big part of the Highlight course, and that's something that we'll talk about a bunch in this conversation. If you want to see a text transcript of this interview, you can go to the Make Time website. Just click on articles and you will find it there. And if you're interested in learning more about the Highlight course, you can find information about that also on the Make Time site. So go to maketime.blog and click on course in the sidebar. So with that, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Eric Skogsberg. Thanks again for being willing to do this. Would you mind talking a little bit about your role and the kind of work that you do and how you got into it?
I'm currently the associate director here at MSU's Hub for Innovation, Learning and Technology. And in that role, I guide a lot of our overall organizational strategy, you know, help with our professional development and supporting our teams as we execute really what is large-scale learning experience design work for the university. The Hub is a internal design consultancy for the university when it comes to learning experience design projects of a variety of types. But if I were to distill it down, a lot of what we do is we help people redesign existing programs. We help people stand up new programs. We help people move existing programs in the online space. And then sometimes we'll be doing work that helps people better understand the nature of needs that folks might have in a certain college or unit on campus, or would do some design inquiry in an area that would better help us understand the student experience. Because a lot of what we do is focused at the end of the day on designing a more valuable student experience, making Michigan State the place that students want to come. And we really believe as an organization that that starts with being student focused. And so we use a lot of human-centered design approaches in our work. And as the associate director, I guide a lot of that overall strategy for where we're going as an organization. I got into this work after multiple years involved in education and educational spaces. I started out as a high school educator. I was a high school English teacher for 3 years back out in Washington State. Grew up in a family that was in education. My dad was a public school teacher for a number of years. And so I went and did the same and got to a point where there are questions that were coming up for me in my work that I wanted to further pursue in a graduate school space and really carve out some space for research. So that led me into doing a PhD in curriculum, instruction, and teacher education, and had me both taking up those questions about the classroom and practice and best ways to support students in learning, and also to help others grow in being teachers or facilitators. And so after completing my PhD work, that was about the time that the Hub was opening and opportunities intersected, and right place, right time. This was the place that I jumped into and wanted to go to further realize what work I had been doing in the past.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you know, when we first met, I remember being intrigued by the perspective that you bring to learning and to education, and the sense of designing an educational experience. And you know, to be frank, that's when I think about being in school, you know, I don't always think of that experience as having been designed. You know, it just sort of seems like, well, classes are the way classes are. And so I wonder some of the questions that you mentioned, you know, things that you noticed in the classes that you were teaching or with some of your peers, and the things that you wanted to research and start to work on. Are those challenges or issues or questions that had always been there? Or were those things that had changed over time as our world and our technology and our institutions have changed?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question. I think it's a bit of both and there. You know, growing up as a son of a public school teacher, you know, I saw the side of that designed experience, if you will, because my dad oftentimes talked about what he was doing in the classroom, how it was working, how it could be better, how students were taking it up. And so that was certainly something that was in my mind as I was deciding to pursue that as a direction that I wanted to go. I was asking similar questions, you know, how could I create the best or design the best, you know, sort of experiences to ultimately get both me and my students in the directions that we hoped we could go. And as we did that and things came up that I both expected and didn't expect, how could we best respond to go in the directions that we wanted to go? But yeah, you know, to your point about new technologies, new literacies out in the world, you know, that were very much a part of, you know, smartphones and different technologies that were becoming more part of the classroom space as computers and laptops were more available. What it then meant to integrate those in a way that would be best supportive of the directions that I hoped we could go in a class and would also be most responsive to what students valued. You know, a lot of what has driven me in education is creating, you know, the best and most valuable experiences with students and starting with where they are versus what, you know, I think would be best for them, right? I have an idea of directions that I'm hoping that we could go, but they bring their hopes, dreams, valuable practices from outside of the classroom that I was hoping, you know, across any classroom that I've been a teacher in or facilitated, that we could co-design a learning experience together based on what they valued and ultimately the direction that we collectively were hoping to go. So, you know, I'd say it was a both and. I've always been interested in how to best design those experiences, but as the different, you know, new factors or new technologies or new pieces came to be, it added another layer to that question. And that's what I've always loved to do, is to figure that puzzle out, set up that experience, and then as the human beings are there, to respond and to dynamically move in the best way that we collectively needed to go, so that we co-design that best experience together.
So when you talk about where a student wants to go, that seems like a very progressive idea. Again, just thinking back to sort of the common, you know, typical educational experience, and certainly many that I've been a part of, you know, it seems like it's all about where the teacher wants to go. And it seems like, you know, in its worst forms, it's about what tests we're required to pass and what assessments we need to reach based on what the state wants us to do or whatever it might be. And so when you think about the work you do now, what do students want? I mean, what is the goal? Like in the ideal state, like what are the students trying to get out of the learning experiences that you design? And how do you figure out what that is?
Couple short answers to that. And I'll qualify it because it really is a new set of questions and answers each time, because it's so contextual to that group of students or that class or experience. But, you know, in large part, what I've learned over the years is, you know, students want, you know, fruitful paths for their lives, a fulfilling life after, you know, whatever that educational experience is, to make an impact out in the world, to, you know, make enough money to be comfortable, some hopes for self-actualization, whether they would use those terms or not, always come up. And I hear more and more, you know, really wanting to make a positive impact in local communities and the world at large, which, you know, I hear less and less about, you know, I want to make sure I know this content, right? Or I want to make sure I've secured, you know, X class or X book. It's more focused on what we could do out in the world and, you know, to be set up in a way that, you know, you could have a vocation or a career that could both provide economically and also provide in ways for that self-actualization piece. So that's oftentimes what comes up as I'm talking with folks, regardless of discipline there. So that shows up across a variety of courses or classes there. You know, and to your point about starting with where the student or students are, I mean, you're right. That's pretty radical, and that's ultimately something that has always been a motivator for me in my work in education. Is that, you know, yes, too often, unfortunately, education's been watered down into performance on a test, or unfortunately, you know, schooling systems have been used to just sort students out, and we ultimately end up missing out on the awesome potentials of students from across a variety of communities and backgrounds, you know, based on how our school systems and tax structures are set up. This oftentimes falls down across racial lines that the schooling system has oftentimes been a part of sorting against. And so, you know, really starting with where the students are and valuing who they are as they come into that space, and then building from there is a radical, but for me, an essential starting point. It's a lot more fun too to teach from that vantage point, because then I'm always surprised as to where we go, and then I'm learning in the process. That's always been a key joy for me, is that I've seen myself as a teacher learner there. And then that makes for a much more dynamic human learning experience versus me coming in and saying, you know, my background is in English ed as a discipline. My background coming in and saying, you know, I'm here to teach you X, Y, and Z about Shakespeare or this set of great canonical authors. If I'm starting with some key human questions and how folks have taken that up, and then working with students to see how that resonates with them and building from there, that's a much more exciting job and focus for my work.
When I listen to you talk about these things, when you talk about life skills and self-actualization and the ability to have an impact and the ability to provide for oneself, these sound like really universal goals. And I wonder how much of what you know and what you study and what your work entails, how much of that is spreading outside the educational system and outside of sort of formal educational institutions? Because when I think about, you know, I think about people trying to be better about managing their money or be healthier, or, you know, certainly the reason that you and I connected, you know, having to do with helping people make good use of their time. To what extent are these ideas spreading beyond the educational world, and what can people, I don't know, take from these things? How can they use these principles in their overall lives, seeing as the goals that so many people bring to their education really do tap into those kind of core life disciplines?
You know, I mean, To your point there, I think we're seeing this pop up in a variety of places that, you know, as folks seek better and better ways to, you know, make use of the time in their day to create more margin in their lives, whether that be with money or time. I see this popping up in a lot of places, and it's, you know, it's made me wonder at points, and we've talked about this in the past, the extent to which this is connected to how we've used, misused, and then are at a point with our contemporary technologies that we're making different decisions about who we want to be as people, relative all these supposed advances that we've made here, that we've created so many of these distractions that ultimately are taking us away from what we want to do. You know, I think that has certainly been a factor there. You know, the other thing that comes up for me is, you know, how folks might use this in their daily life outside of an educational space. You know, it makes me wonder the extent to which organizations might do a better job supporting their employees or the clients they work with, and really starting from what they bring into that space and a focus on that self-actualization and goal setting and starting in ways that connect to what people want and where they want to go versus forcing what the organization wants them to do or something like that. That's another.
So you mean almost in a sort of employee personal development type of sense, treating that process and that relationship as more of a learning experience and less of management experience, I guess.
Yes. And what that does is that sees each person in that organization as, you know, a human being in process and their growth as integrally linked to the growth of the organization, you know.
Sure. And sees them as a learner, not just as a, you know, an employee or a cog in a machine.
Exactly. And what an awesome and much more dynamic way to see people and then the growth of an organization. And, you know, we've talked about this at other points too, whether it's here at MSU or speaking with organizations outside of MSU, I'm hearing more and more of a need and focus on doing transformation work when it comes to either internal to an organization or, say, agencies who are wanting to support in their consulting work transformation. And transformation at its core is very much about learning, right? Yeah. Learning and growth, starting at one place, hoping to get to another, and that process through which we get there. And I think that's if we saw the people that we worked with as in process, as learners, as in this process of transformation, we'd see some really awesome outcomes in the directions that we might be hoping to both individually and collectively go.
I would love to get really tactical for a second. So the work that you do, and when you think about learning experiences, are those courses, are those classes, are those degree programs, are those other things that I'm not thinking of?
Yeah, so it's really all of the above there. We do things at different scopes. And if, say, we're talking about a program, that program would have courses that are connected to it, and courses both in the traditional sense that we might think about in terms of, you know, students and an educator or faculty member actually meeting in a classroom space there for a specific time each week, and or online learning experiences there where students might engage in some material in an online space and then have online forums there. And or a hybrid space where it's a mixture of those things, students meeting both face-to-face with their faculty member or educator, and then meeting in some way asynchronously or synchronously in a digital space. In addition to what would be, you know, outside of class learning experiences. So for example, one of the projects that we just shipped out of the hub is a co-curricular record that we were a big part of both the design and development on. Which,
what does that mean? Can you define that?
For sure. So this was an online space that students could keep track of their outside of class learning experiences. So clubs that they were a part of, organizations that they belong to on campus and off campus, in a way that, just like, you know, they had produced through their traditional learning experiences a transcript, here was a place that they could also document those awesome outside of class experiences that they were having too, as they went out onto the job market.
And how do they capture those, the sort of outcomes or the benefits of those experiences? I mean, is there a certain template, or is there a type of set of questions that are asked, or a certain type of reflection that you are asking students to do as they're creating that outside of the classroom transcript for themselves?
Yeah. So my understanding of how they set that up in the system there is that they actually had a set of aligned outcomes that then aligned to some of our overall undergraduate student learning outcomes. And so folks in how they were cataloging there did some of those alignment moves to make sure that their reflections or how they documented connected to some of the overall institutional outcomes, and then even outcomes that students had for themselves was my understanding of how they ultimately made those alignment pieces.
So it might be something like, there might be an outcome related to project management work, and then a student would plug in, you know, a club that they were a part of and how it involved, you know, hosting an event, and that, you know, gave them, you know, experience and taught them something about how to manage projects in the real world. Is that the sort of thing?
Yep. You got it. You know, we also do, when it comes to designing different learning experiences, have created some, you know, completely outside of credit bearing space opportunities for students. So for example, we have a partnership with Apple for an iOS design lab, which is a, you know, non-credit bearing outside of the typical school day opportunity for undergraduates to build their skills in development and Swift coding, and take up a lot of human-centered design approaches in doing so. So that's another place where we've continued to build out.
So we touched on kind of self assessment or reflection that helps to connect the dots between experiences, whether they're kind of formal classroom or more kind of real world experiential types of things, connecting those with the specific outcomes or goals that students have. You know, I know from talking to you, and I have the sense based on what we've chatted about so far, that's a really important part of creating truly great learning experience that actually makes a difference, that actually helps people learn new skills, change their behaviors. And I'm wondering, I mean, first of all, I'm wondering, is that right? And second of all, what are the others? I mean, when you think about, when you approach a project, is there a set of, I don't know, 3 things or 5 things or 10 things in your mind that's kind of like, all right, to make this as great as it can be, it's got to check these boxes?
Yeah. So answer to your first question is, yes, self-assessment and, you know, what we call metacognition, or actually thinking about your thinking or the processes that you go through in a learning experience are really important, because it has you at multiple points really providing some self-feedback, if you will. You know, here's, okay, based on where I'm hoping to go, here's where I am, right? Or here's where I see I am, or here's where, based on the feedback I'm getting, I see I am, and here's what ultimately I need to shift or adjust in order to better get to the directions that I'm hoping to go. And that's a key process, whether it's inside or outside of a classroom, for us to be able to step back and say, you know, am I where I hope I could be, or am I where I hope I could be for where I want to go? And if so, great, what should I continue to do? And if not, what should I change? And then that helps us as we go into any future, especially as we're talking about learning experiences, and to understand how we best learn, then those habits and those approaches can then be a part of how I approach that next learning experience, whether that be inside or outside a classroom.
As you know, a key part of the Make Time framework is that daily reflect step. And a big sort of revelation for me was that, you know, people are used to being very analytical and critical about their work and about what they're doing at their jobs. But most people, it seems, are not in the habit of doing that reflection, that self-assessment about their time, which is something that obviously is so important to everybody. But so anyway, that's just a parallel that I picked up on. But I want to hear more about sort of what the other, the rest of the checklist of kind of pillars of a great learning experience are.
Yeah. So for me, when I'm going into the design of an experience there, I'm certainly thinking about something that has some clear outcomes there for that experience, and something that is very much about how that experience will help students, you know, actualize whatever knowledge, habits, skills, values would come out of that class or experience actually out in the world versus in just the classroom itself. So that's oftentimes something that, and we did a little bit of this in the work on Make Time. You know, ultimately, what do you hope students are able to do with this after the course is done? You know, that's, I spend a lot of time with folks, you know, walking through, you know, that last day of the course, or if you ran into a student 6 months or a year down the road, what do you hope would still be there? Because that ultimately helps us keep then the design of that experience focused on ultimately realizing those objectives and outcomes there.
And it sounds like it's much more tangible than thing, like the outcomes are not just things that you know. It's not just like a new couple of pages in your personal encyclopedia of knowledge. You know, it's like it's skills, or you said it's values, or it's mindsets, or it's perspectives on things.
Yeah, so that's a key thing there. You know, we were talking just earlier about embedded assessment across the experience, across and leading out of that experience. So do a lot of work with folks on making sure that they're clear on, you know, based on these objectives that I've set for the course, how will I know students have ultimately reached those? Like, what does that look like? What did they do, or what did they produce, or what comes out of this in terms of a project or a new outlook or something that has been done? And then ultimately embedding little checks along the way, little assessments along the way that help both the designers of that experience or the educator, facilitator of that, see where students are. And then also for students to see where they are too, because I'm sure we've all had experiences and courses where we feel off track, but aren't getting the feedback that we need to know how to get back on track, or it wasn't even clear what track we were on in the first place, right? Sure. So those are really key pieces there. Connected to assessment, regular feedback, right, on that, and that can come in a variety of forms. But you know, optimally, when it comes down to it, a lot of the research on feedback has focused on really just distilling it down to, you know, where am I going as a learner in a course? How am I going, or how's it going and getting there? And then what do I need to do next based on the answers to both of those? And so when I'm working with folks on the design of any experience, we've got to embed both those assessments and those feedback points so that folks can ultimately adjust and practice.
And does that feedback come from the instructor, or does it come from peers, or where does that come from ideally?
Yeah, so both. And I'd say both ideally there, because, you know, having multiple perspectives there on your practice are really is really important. You know, there are points at which It's better to have some peer feedback based on where you are in your work or in that overall learning experience leading into what might be a larger performance of where you are that you'd be getting than feedback from the instructor or the facilitator. And sometimes, you know, when we're talking about certain kinds of learning experiences, having that peer feedback is going to be more helpful or would resonate more with folks in their learning journey than having it from the instructor at that point. So I'd say, you know, having it from both angles and in ways that align back to the overall, again, objectives for the course are ideal.
Yeah. And that kind of makes me think of one of the positive benefits of technology and all the digital and networked technologies that we have, which certainly have downsides, but one of the positive benefits is all the opportunities for essentially peer feedback and peer validation. You know, the ability for a nerdy kid growing up in a rural area, as I was, you know, to go online and discover a community of people who are into what you're into. And it's a different paradigm than the traditional top-down model, whether it's in media or education. And so I don't know if there is a connection there, but it seems to me that there's a connection between sort of how our world has changed and how technology has changed our world, and also what that means for the educational experiences that we have.
No, agreed. I'd say that's given rise to a variety of what folks called communities of practice that can sometimes be organized top down, but are oftentimes more self-organizing based on just what folks want to learn to do better. And in fact, they find each other based on what they want to practice together and then create these more informal communities that provide the space through which that growth happens, right? And the digital technologies that are out there now have really made that much easier to do. It's been interesting to follow in the teacher education space, personal and professional learning networks that teachers have created solely through social media, with teachers that don't even work in their schools, and they'll crowdsource ideas for things that they want to do in classes upcoming, and then have this whole community out on social media respond and then continue that dialogue and learning there. And a lot of that started because those educators were unsatisfied with the quality of professional development they were getting traditionally in their schools.
For anybody listening who doesn't know, Eric has been working with us on developing the Highlight course, which is the 4-week program that Jake and I have created to help people really create a sustainable and durable habit around making time for what matters to them. And one of the elements of that course, one of the core essential components of it, is that sort of peer group, that community. And I kind of have the sense that certainly feedback is helpful. You know, we've been talking about that, just, you know, the ability to kind of get feedback from your peers, from people who are in a similar situation to you. But I wonder if you could talk about the other roles of that community or the other purposes of that community, and whether there are elements of support or accountability that maybe don't stem from structured feedback, but really are important benefits of learning and building new skills and building new habits in the company of your peers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, just out of the gate, the two things that you mentioned there, support and accountability, are key benefits of being able to be a part of a cohort or a community group that's embedded in this course. You know, when you have a community of folks that are counting on you and you're counting on them as you're committed to realizing the outcomes of a course, there's some built-in motivation for doing the work and sticking to the work. You know, we as human beings are social animals, and you know, having that group that is doing similar things and has set similar goals and has similar deadlines, there's really something to that in keeping us focused on, you know, staying the course, if you will, in there and knowing that, hey, at the end of this week, you know, I'm going to be, or at the end of this module, I'm going to be sharing with my group about where I am. You know, you feel a different push to not let that group down because they're experiencing some similar successes and challenges. There's a built-in accountability because of the relationship that oftentimes comes up in these communities. And so when it comes to support, that community of practice or that cohort also offers a space for folks in relationship to both share their successes and challenges in both learning these new approaches, practicing those approaches and how they're working, and then bringing it back. And because they have a relationship there, you can both celebrate in those successes and then lean on each other when it comes to the challenges that have come up. You know, another big thing that comes up when folks learn in groups or cohorts here or community of practice is that you really have the opportunity to benefit from multiple perspectives on course material or on that learning experience. You know, there's a lot more out now, and you know, about the importance of a diversity of perspectives when it comes to an organization, when it comes to the strength of teams, when it comes to the strength of a learning experience. And so to have multiple people speaking into both where you are in the course as you're sharing what's happening, and even, you know, on the material itself, gives you multiple vantage points on your growth and learning there that you wouldn't get if you're just doing that on your own. And then we, you know, talked earlier about this being a key point for feedback from another perspective. The other thing that comes up for me too, as I'm thinking about the group, is that, and this comes back to some of the diversity of perspectives and that allows for you to sort of co-construct here new knowledge together because of those multiple perspectives and a new vantage point, something you may not have thought about if you would have just been engaging with the course content itself. It also gives you a window into, you know, new ideas or new approaches that you might not have thought about as you're listening to watching folks who may be excelling in areas that you're struggling in. That's a place where, you know, oftentimes I've seen and research has pointed to the importance of, you know, having those mixed groups of folks that really provide some support as they're excelling in one area and somebody's struggling in another, that can counteract some of those pieces. And so to have access to that group there really provides a much richer perspective and experience for the folks doing the course.
So that's great. I mean, I sort of took down in my notes here as we were talking, kind of this checklist. And I don't know if you'd structure it this way, or maybe this is already written down somewhere, but sort of the self-assessment or reflection, the kind of outcome-oriented approach to designing the learning experience from the beginning, the assessments or checks that really are a part of the course design to make sure you're on track. Feedback coming from both the instructor as well as peers, and then the accountability and the support from a diversity of perspectives within the cohort, or the phrase you used was the community of practice. I don't know if that covers it, if there's anything else, but I thought that was a pretty interesting set of criteria when it comes to thinking about these types of experiences.
You summed that up well, and I'd add, as I was listening to you, and I think there's some overlap with the other ones there, but an additional piece for me is as I'm designing experiences myself, working, you know, consulting for others on it, is an experience that really sets up folks to do things in the ways closest to how they would be out in the world, right? So if, for example, in the Make Time course, you know, yeah, folks could read the book and learn about the strategies there, but it really comes down to being able to enact, apply those strategies in their lives, and then as they both succeed and fail at points, respond there, that that's much closer to how it looks out in the world than if, you know, they read the book cover to cover or didn't have the opportunity to, say, engage with others or have that structured practice. Because when it comes to skill building, practice and feedback are key, that you really need that opportunity to actually do this in the most authentic way possible in that learning experience for it to be a success after that experience is done. So I'm oftentimes in working with folks, and this is where I will often defer to the expertise of whoever I'm consulting for there, is that, you know, what's closest to how this actually looks out in the world, right? If we're talking about, you know, whatever discipline, it's oftentimes not, you know, reading the book and taking a test in the class. It's about being able to apply this out in the world in the actual context where it is, in the dynamic circumstances and messiness of life out there, that ultimately gets them closest to succeeding in this and realizing the outcomes of the learning experience or the course.
In the workshops that I teach, the Design Sprint workshop and the Make Time workshop, I have a mantra that I use for myself and sometimes with the participants, which is do it for real. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe it just comes from sort of tradition or what we consider to be normal, but there's a tendency when in a classroom type environment to operate in this sort of fake artificial headspace. And I'm always trying to push people and always trying to push myself to do it for real. Actually apply the activities, the things you're learning, practice in as realistic of an environment or with as realistic of a problem as possible.
Yep. And you're also reminding me here too of another key piece that I see both in your workshops and also in both the Make Time book and course, is that, you know, any learning experience has to have, and this comes back kind of full circle to the beginning of our conversation, has to really have the learner at the center. You know, I think too often when we're creating learning experiences, we've forgotten about what it means to be a novice in whatever that work is. And so we'll ultimately end up designing something for experts or people that already speak our language, or in this case with the Make Time work, maybe folks who are already further down the road, versus thinking about where people will be entering into that experience, and then both chunking things out in a way that's manageable for folks when this is new to them, and also providing some key scaffolds and intermediary steps that really helps folks to, you know, build those pieces slowly along the way, because they're not at the point that whoever designing that learning experience is at. And too often we forget about that. And so that's something that I'm oftentimes working with folks on, is, you know, channeling the novice and channeling the student who's just coming into the course. Where are they? Where do you hope that they, through this learning experience, could get to? And then, okay, what does it mean to slowly build them to that? Because you can't just jump them in where you are. And we oftentimes take for granted those things that have just been internalized as we're experts on those things. So
it's very, very hard to do, mm-hmm. to remember what it was like to not know something.
Yes, exactly right.
So most of the people listening to this probably are not designing learning experiences, and most of them are probably not participating in the Highlight course, although I hope that we will reach as many people as possible with it. But for everybody else, is there a way to apply this stuff to individual life? You know, if somebody's looking at their life and they're thinking about a change they want to make, if they're thinking about a new set of behaviors, something that they want to learn to, you know, make better use of their time, to be healthier, to be more successful, whatever it might be, have better relationships. Are there takeaways from the stuff that we just talked about? Are there ways to apply these sort of pillars of learning into individual activities?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it comes back to, again, where we started there, really being clear with yourself about where you're ultimately hoping to go, right? And that takes some really important self-work, but being real clear on that, ultimately, where am I hoping to be or go, or what am I hoping to be able to do by the end of X period of time, and clearly spelling that out, even down to, you know, in the work that we were doing together. I do a lot of work with folks in identifying the key verbs there that really encapsulate where they're hoping to go, that's something that whatever the goal is, really being clear on what it means to be at that point, the actions or the habits and where that is, and then how you as an individual would know if you got there, right? What does that mean? Is that the book being done? Is that the race that you finished? Is that, you know, whatever that, whatever tells you that you've ultimately reached that point. And then to our conversation earlier there, then chunking that out in a way that helps you slowly build to that and gather the feedback, both, you know, the self-assessment pieces, the assessment of peers, the assessment of experts, depending upon, you know, what direction you're hoping to go, that ultimately help to tell you at multiple points, how well am I getting to this ultimate goal that I set up for myself? And if I'm getting there, if I'm moving there in the direction and in the way and pace that I'm hoping, what should I continue doing? Or if I'm not, what do I need to stop doing, or what do I need to adjust? And it's amazing what just those simple pieces can help us to do for realizing a variety of goals in our life. You know, one of the most powerful pieces in the make time work, amongst a landscape of powerful things, there is that reflection piece. You know, the way that we embed reflection across our lives, and especially in the life projects or goals that we're hoping to realize, is a really helpful gathering point for us to step back, again, get a sense of, here's where I'm hoping to go, here's what I'm planning to do to get there, and at each of those points along the way, I'm checking in and saying, how far did I get? How well is this going? What do I need to continue doing? And what might I need to adjust to better realize getting to this place that I set for myself? And I think those are really powerful, simple and powerful things that we can do across a variety of spaces in our lives.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. This has been really interesting for me. I have learned so much from talking to you, both in this conversation and in all the other conversations that we've had. And I really, in particular, think that the work that we've done together on the Highlight course goes a long way toward making that as good of a learning experience as possible. And I'm really excited to give people who are interested in making time for what matters to them a really fantastic way of doing that, a program that kind of checks all these boxes of all these different features that we talked about. I just wanted to thank you both for your help with that, but also for this chat.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My pleasure. And you know, I'd say too, it's been additionally a joy to do, because I very much believe in the ideas in the book and in the course. They've had a real impact on me and in my life. And so to be able to get that out to more people, and to do so in a way that will continue to build a community of people who are shifting the defaults for time in their lives, it's just an absolute joy to be a part of that with you.
Cool. Thanks again.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, everybody. Thanks again for listening. And thanks especially to Eric for sharing his expertise on learning, on reaching goals, and on changing behaviors in everyday life. If you want to see a text transcript of this interview, you can just go to the Make Time website and click on articles, and you will find it there. And if you'd like to learn more about the Highlight course, which Eric helped us develop, you can go to maketime.blog. And click on course, and you'll see everything you need to know there. Thanks.